Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hello, this is Master Mark Sorianis, and I am coming to you from New York City, and I am going to be speaking today to a frequent guest on our program, someone whose movies we've reviewed and love, and that is Jesse V. Johnson. Before we talk to Jesse, I'm going to get our advertising out of the way. Today's sponsor is BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, and more. BetOnline continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting for your favorite casino and card games, available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the gaming starts. How are you, sir?
Good,
I can't hear you. Let me just see.
It doesn't say.
Good. I can hear you now. How's everything?
Good, man. How are you doing? Thank you for having me on. Really appreciate it.
No. My pleasure to see you again. How's everything been? All right.
Good. Rocking and rolling here. Doing as much as we can. Keeping busy, you know?
Yeah. A little bit of a difficult time now, right? In terms of production and things with everything going on in the industry, right? So it's probably
It doesn't terribly affect indie movies because obviously we can get waivers, but it is a tricky, you know, a lot of people not really knowing what they're supposed to be doing and things like that. So
right. People not sure. They don't want to offend anyone. They don't want to cross any lines.
Listen, it's an important union, and they've chosen to strike. So you know, we're all members of that union, so we have to sort of be in solidarity with it to a degree.
Sure, I get it. So how's everything? I obviously we had an opportunity to preview and screen One Ranger. We submitted our review. We really liked it. I liked that movie a lot.
Thank you so much, man.
It really always impresses me how you always manage to do something a little bit different. I always feel like there's a lot of you in it, but it's always something a little bit different. Tell me a little bit about how'd you come to that project?
I wrote the script a ways back. It was a throwback film for me. It was a throwback to the pictures I loved as a young man, you know, things like Coogan's Bluff and Brannigan and even the TV show with Dennis Weaver, you know, about McLeod. And so, you know, I like the idea of taking this mythological character, the cowboy, which is basically, you know, the American form of, you know, Greek mythology. It's the closest we have. It's our ancient Odysseus, our Homer, and putting him in a modern, you know, situation and watching this rangy sort of wisdom, this streetwise world weariness, you know, deal with all the problems that we all have to go through every day, you know, and see how it comes out at the end, you know. I think it's a winning formula, and I wanted to give it a shot. I've worked, you know, around the Texas Rangers a little bit on a TV show that I did in Dallas a few decades ago. And I learned about this, you know, one ranger, one riot quote, and I thought it was a fantastic sort of emphasis, you know, basis for a cool action movie, a sort of revisionist one, if possible. The film ended up being a lot more difficult than I expected to do because of the logistics involved and how low the budget was and things like that. But no one sees any of that when they see the movie, and there's no disclaimer. So you know, we're up against films that cost 100 times as much, and no one really comprehends what that means anymore. So you just have to do as best you can at hiding the seams.
That seems to be have become your sweet spot, right? Which is the ability to do more with less, right? So I think a lot of the things that we've talked about, the things that you've done, you really managed to do a lot to be able to work on a film that's low budget, but that yet is sensitive to that and is doesn't give you the feeling that you're cheated as somebody who's watching it, right? From the standpoint of special effects, from the standpoint of action, from the standpoint of the way the film is shot, I never get the sense that I'm watching a film that isn't a high budget film, but yet it seems to be repeatedly the place where you seem to be plugged in, right? Is the area where, hey, this is the guy who can do a lot with a little.
That's a lovely thing to say, and I'll take it as a compliment. It's certainly not where I want to stay, and certainly not what I want to keep doing. And really, it'd be rather something I wasn't known for. I'd like to have bigger budgets, and they're coming, and they are. I signed a deal with these two films, White Elephant and One Ranger, which were particularly good scripts that ended up being done for probably a tenth of what they should have been made for. I did it because it gave me the chance to work with Malkovich and Brooker and Thomas Jane and Olga Kurylenko, and sort of meet these new actors that I really wanted to, you know, to work with. But the budgets were extraordinarily challenging. But, you know, each sort of step in this path of what we call a career, you have to think very carefully. You know, do you want to keep making films with Scott Adkins where people throw sidekicks, which is, there's nothing wrong with that, or do you want to advance to the next sort of cast tier group who are interested, who are asking, or who are sniffing around? And so you make that, but it comes at a price. It comes in, the price I pay is, or paid for those two films, was that they were almost impossible budgets. They were so low. But you get out there and you figure it out and you do what needs to be done and you plan it as best you can and shot list it and storyboard it and try not to send anyone to the hospital or yourself to the hospital and deliver the film. And I did those two, and sure enough, it brokered me into another arena where I've enjoyed a bigger budget on Chief of Station, a film I just did with Aaron Eckhart, or more creative freedom, like I've just done on a film with Boudica, with Olga Kurylenko, because I'd met her through doing White Elephant. So it's not that you are necessarily Machiavellian or manipulative, but you look at each movie as a stepping stone, as an entryway to another arena each time. You know, I get asked really much on a daily basis if there's going to be a sequel to Debt Collectors or a sequel to Savage Dog, and I would love to do those. I wrote those scripts. They were with me for a long time. They were part of my bloodline. You know, it was my blood and tears that went into those movies. But do you want to keep swimming in that pool? You know, do you want to keep eating that particular brand of minnow, or do you want to, you know, take a leap and go into another pool? The problem is, you know, as you probably understand, when you're making films at the director DVD level that are very genre based, that are going out to streaming services to a very specific audience, the films are met with open arms. People love them because the audience that's going to see a Scott Adkins film has chosen to see that film because they love Scott Adkins. And you get this fantastically positive, you know, reviews and all that kind of stuff, and it's brilliant, but none of them are mainstream quite, you know. You make a film with a bigger actor and it gets a theatrical release, it can be a far better film than the other one, but you're going to get slaughtered because now you're out to the real world. Sure. You're living in the sea, and the sharks come and bite at your ribs, and you know, and you know, you're now in the playing field opposite the studio. And what a lot of people don't realize is, you pay for Rotten Tomatoes, you pay for IMDb. It's not fair. It's not free. You pay for publicity for a film. You know, Oppenheimer was $100 million to make, and had approximately $100 million in P&A. So now you're swimming against those guys with your $2,500 P&A budget, and you get absolutely torpedoed, you know, and it can be quite grueling. But you've just got to do it. You have to do it if you want to grow. You know, it's like fighting in martial arts. You know, if you keep fighting the same club and you learn everyone's weaknesses, that's great. Or you go into another club. Or when you're practicing for your next, you know, when you're sparring, don't spar with people that are lower than you or weaker than you or the same. Try and spar the guys who are, you know, a belt above you, you know. And so that's what I've been doing with these films. And it's hard, man. It's really, you know, physically challenging to do it for the money. But
well, the end result may you make it look easy. I mean, both White Elephant and certainly all the films you mentioned, but I really enjoyed White Elephant. It was a little bit different. One Ranger, of course, was great. And of course, you mentioned Debt Collectors and Savage Dog, and those films, of course, were also terrific. And I get your point, because when you deal with those specific genre action films, there's a really devout base that's built in. And you know that no matter what you release, there's going to be, you know, I see these films on Prime, you know, Steven Seagal has like 150 movies that are almost exactly the same. And yet they release them because I assume that their presumption is there's going to be somebody there who's going to watch it, who's dying for that.
For those films are vanishing. I think this, you know, it's slowly, you know, that there is a new era ushering in, which is good, where there's more emphasis on a better movie. You know, that old guard, you know, they can't even get films made at the budget level they once were.
No,
I mention it.
Sure.
You know, it's gone away. And you know, it's okay. It's the way of the business. But I don't look towards those. I'm always looking to try and expand. Although I've got to say there are genre hoppers as well. When we did Avengement, you know, we were reviewed by the New York Times and you know, LA Weekly and Los Angeles Times very, very positively. So there is you can hit a home run, you know, every once in a while, but it's a very risky thing to try and bet on. But it does happen, and you,
sure,
you have one that launches you out into the stratosphere. I think my point is you can't keep trying to repeat that. If it gives you a bit of a launch, then you've got to seize that with whatever you can, move up to the next tier level, and not look back. I'm very, very proud of what we did with One Ranger. I think people should go and see it if they want to see how films are made when they're handmade. You know, you can have a suit that you buy off the rack, or you can have a handmade suit.
Sure.
There's some imperfections in it, and it's not quite as, you know, it's not quite as perfect as something that's made by, you know, in a sweatshop in the Far East, but you'll get something that has that nuance. And I think I hope that, you know, we have that bespoke feeling to One Ranger in my pictures, where they feel like they're made by someone. You can feel someone's point of view, someone's opinion, someone's touch on it. They're not AI, you know what I mean?
No, absolutely. And it really is. Your stories are your movies are very story driven, and they're very character driven, which makes them stand out, right? They're not, even though there are special effects, even though Hell Hath No Fury is a perfect example, right? There's explosives and there's a lot of dynamic scenes, but the essence of the movie is the story and the character interplays and the interesting dynamics of the characters as they unfold, right? As they unfold. Thomas Jane's perfect example in this. How did you end up getting together with him for this one? Because he actually is, of all the things he's done, like, it is the most comfortable role, I think, for him. One of the things that I really felt in watching this movie is he's really comfortable in this role. And I really felt like, all right, this could be a series of movies. This could be the first of a series of One Ranger movies where centered around him.
Yeah, he's fantastic. I had met him two or three times before. We were trying to find scripts to do together. He'd given me a script. Financing, you know, fell through at the last minute. But we enjoyed sort of the conversation we had at his house. I'd always taken note of his house when we'd gone there. He has lots of vintage movie posters and comic books framed, you know, a real interest in older cinema, which I do too. Love the films of Bud Boudicca and Howard Hawks and Ford and Raoul Walsh and these guys. And we'd speak about that stuff. We'd go to talk about the movie, and within 10 to 15 minutes, we'd be talking about film history or pictures made with Randolph Scott or John Wayne pictures, you know, the ones that he did with Walsh or Hawks. And we'd go off at a tangent for hours on an end and be frustrated because we hadn't talked about the movie. So when, you know, this script sort of became available to me again, it had been under option for a while. I wrote it a ways back. He was the perfect guy to take it to, and it was pretty quick. He liked it, you know, right away. We had a long conversation about the character. On set, he's in character. You know, he's Tyree talking in the Texas accent between takes at lunchtime at the end of the day. You know, the questions he has are very minimal because we've done all of that ahead of time. He is absolutely immersive. We had had a couple of scares on this when I visited the second unit, and I'm obviously wanting to make sure they're working quickly because they've got a lot to do, and we're third camera goes between second and first unit, so you have two cameras when you have the choice for it. And they were using the second camera, so I was, you know, wanted to make sure they were filming. And I get to the second unit, and the stunt double for Thomas Jane is sitting eating crisps, you know, English guy. And I absolutely blew a gasket at him. And he said, no, they're filming. Thomas is doing all his own stunts. And I looked over, and sure enough, Thomas is in there sweaty and beat up and bruised and being thrown through cabinets. And it's like, this, you know, this is awesome. This is really, really cool. This is what you're very hesitant to ask for that in this day and age, because you don't want the actor to hurt himself, or you don't want to appear to be putting pressure on them to do something above and beyond. So it's just great when you have an actor who really invests. Scott Adkins does that.
Sure.
Michael Rooker did it. The best of the best will get in there, roll their sleeves up, rehearse it. You know, they won't be, they won't be foolish, but they'll get in there. You know, they work with the stuntman, and you have something beautiful. And it was really great working with Thomas. He was fantastic.
And that's great. And I thought, by the way, White Elephant was probably one of Michael Rooker's best roles. I mean, he's so memorable, well known, and such a character actor, but he really nailed that role as well. A very, very similar. You know, he really was the heart of that movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah, he was good. These are interesting films. They'll be seen in a canon of pictures. Like a lot of my films, when they come out, people kind of scratch their head, and then you cut back to them 2 or 3 years later, and there's a cult following for them. You know, when Savage Dog came out, I had death threats from people. You know, what had I done with Boyko? Why had I given him this terrible Irish accent? And you cut to it now, it's the one I get the most emails and Instagram things, and people are just, you know, wanting to know what's going on with it. Is there another one? Where did the story come from? So these films have a habit of sort of get entering the subconsciousness and sort of percolating and developing there, which is fun. It's good, you know. I pride myself on not copying the zeitgeist, not trying.
That's great.
John Wick, not trying to be the next Extraction, not trying to be the next Matrix, you know, that doesn't work for me. They have to come from somewhere more base, somewhere more organic, somewhere in my soul. I don't mind if they come from Clint Eastwood and Don Siegel in 1968, that's okay, to Coogan's Bluff. You know, that's fair hunting ground for me. But anything within the last decade or 2 decades.
That's true homage, as opposed to simply, you know, trying to ride the wave of what's happening, right? Because we start to see
important. I'm sounding like I'm trying to blow my trumpet too much, but the truth of the matter is, you want your influences to feel like they've come from a different direction, not from the same gene pool that everyone else is watching.
You know? I think you do that real well. Now, Dean Jagger in the film in One Ranger is great. He was in Avengement, I believe, also, and he's known here probably more for his role in the series, now revived series, Warrior, the Bruce Lee series, which is on HBO Max now, or Max as they call it. But he does a terrific job as the villain in One Ranger, and I love the fact that it was tempered, right? So it's not. You know, it would have been really easy, I think, to have him go to the next level and become like a comic book supervillain, you know, as opposed to being a human being.
We talked about it an awful lot. What we didn't want to do was play him as a bad guy twirling his mustache. I wanted to give him as many layers as possible, you know, because real bad guys don't know they're the bad guys. They think they're the good guys. Usually, you know, they've figured out a way to validate what they're doing. And for him, it was being a freedom fighter. And what we realize is that he's gone from being a freedom fighter to being just an outright criminal. But he doesn't quite realize it until he talks to all these people along the way from his old life. Who are like, yeah, you've lost the course, man. Don't come back here again. Patrick Bergen, the wonderful Rachel Wilde, all of these people that at one point bought into him have been disillusioned. And he's no longer part of that anymore. He's gone from being a freedom fighter to just being a fighter. And we wanted that to be somewhat sad and somewhat melancholy. I think we went too far. I think he's almost too appealing, and he's almost like a good guy by the end of it. But that's okay. You know, those are the risks you take. And as long as he wasn't, you know, a cardboard cutout villain, that's what we didn't want. But I love Dean. I've known him a long time. I knew him when he first came to LA. He was an MMA guy and skateboarder, and, you know, started, you know, had this hunger to make movies. And I like these big guys who look ostensibly like thugs, but then you realize there's a gentleness, a sincerity, and a spirituality to him that belies the tough guy exterior, like Jess Liaudin, who plays Oleg. He did Game of Thrones, which is where he really started to come onto the scene. I've never worked with him before. He looks like he should have been in Avengement. I agree.
My apologies. Yeah.
No, not at all. And then Warrior came about, and we're like, this is the one. This is the one. We can make it work. We can do it on this. I hope to work with him again. I think he's tremendous.
Yeah, he was great. He's very different in Warrior than he is in your film. He's definitely got a lot of range, but there's a lot there. Complexity of characters, again, is one of the things that I think that is really positive. So One Ranger now, folks can get it's probably not as in the U.S. I don't think there's too many theatrical places, right, where they can see it, but it is
we were in quite a few. I'm so thankful to Lionsgate for getting behind the film. They're really ballsy bunch, you know. Lauren Bixby is phenomenal. She, you know, really a gambler and a risk taker, and you know they're putting out John Wick at the same time as this picture, and they put ours into theaters. We got far more than was expected. A lot of theaters. Film did fantastic. The gangbusters business across the Midwest, less so on the coasts, but that, you know, we knew that was going to be sure. The case. And has a great following. It's available now. It's just come out on Blu-ray and DVD. I highly recommend it. If you still have that ancient, you know, prehistoric technology, I would say sit on Blu-ray, sit on DVD. There's a tremendous behind the scenes that's put together by Jonathan Mefford, which Lionsgate put the money up for, which is really, really good. It interviews all of the cast and special effects and stunts, and it explains how this film is different from your average movie that you're seeing out there at the moment. You're seeing guys that are risking it all. They're going in there, they're getting bloody, bruised, beaten, sweating. We use practical special effects, practical guns. These aren't plastic guns that are, you know, people are painting, you know, these real belt-fed machine guns, and there's a that causes a knock-on effect with the way the actor holds it, way that he reacts, the way that the sparks and special effects react. It's you know, and I realize we're in the minority who are doing films this practical, you know, blue-collar way, and it's I think it's brilliant. I think people should look at it. It doesn't mean it's better than the big movies. The big movies are wonderful, polished, beautiful,
sure,
family eggs, you know, they're great, and we enjoy those. But go see a picture like this and you'll get a more idiosyncratic take on what's going on, and more of that handmade, you know, feel that, you know, it was just a lot of people really putting on a great show, good performances, and I think there's something to be said for that. There was a reason when this industry started. You had the A movie with the B movie underneath. There was a reason when, you know, the old video stores would have the A movie releases there and the indie releases there, because there's an appeal to both. There's an appeal, a human appeal. We are just telling stories around a campfire. And yeah, the polished storyteller is going to tell a great one, but the drunk from up the street is going to tell you one that's going to make you roll on your side with laughter. And every once in a while, it's, you know, go to another source, enjoy something like this, you know? So,
absolutely. And there's a lot to it. And the best part about it is you can come into it without this preconceived notions, and you're going to get something. There's a lot there, especially in this one, which has got like it's a bit of an amalgam of genres, right? So it's a bit of a Western, but it's a bit of an action film. It's got a little bit of a spy film. It's got a lot going on. So, and it's an unusual, right? It's an unusual amalgam of,
like, it's a good little bit of a martial arts movie in there as well.
Absolutely.
These three lay down, you know, knockdown fights that the Oleg has with Thomas Jane. That was part of the appeal for me, was that he just never gives up, you know. And these fights, they're both too old. Neither one of them should be fighting like that. And that's sort of the fun of it, you know.
Absolutely. And it is interesting from opening shot to end, right? It's one of the things that I think also has become a disease of Hollywood in particular is because they spend so much money on making these movies that they make them insufferably long for no reason. And there's just, you know, I'm not sure who's editing all of these, but your films are very tight. I always find them to be very tight. And
I'm gonna make from, really long ones soon. I'm just going to do it. I grew up loving them. I'm Lawrence Arabia and Good the Band.
I don't mind long. I just sometimes feel they're, you know, when you watch them, it's also been the trend of documentaries, right? Like, I feel like all these documentaries on streaming that could be done in one show, they stretched them out for five episodes and you go, I'm not 100% sure what the financial aspects of that are, but it just seems to me that there's no need for it. The story could be told in a much tighter way.
Yeah, there's a self-indulgence for sure to some of them, but you know, I don't know. It's tricky, isn't it? As long as they come with an intermission, I think you're good. It's just long for the sake of being long. You're making some physical miscalculations by doing that.
Absolutely. So I know this one is out. I know you have at least two others. You mentioned them here. You have two others. Are those going to be coming out in 2023, you expect, or probably now?
We have one before the end of the year, Boudica with Olga Kurylenko, which I'm very, very proud of. I want everyone to go see that. That's coming out through Saban. before the end of the year, limited theatrical, and UK it's Netflix. And then I believe first quarter of 24 is Chief of Station with Aaron Eckhart, which is a much bigger film, a step up to a bigger budget for me. It's got some great production value. It's a throwback to the 1980s spy films that I loved, you know, pictures like, you know, Gorky Park just the Bond pictures that we loved from that era. Fifth Column, those kind of pictures. It's set nowadays, but very much, you know, if you look at spying, it's turned around on its head. We no longer use, you know, telephones and internet the same way because they've become so easy to hack. So the spy techniques and methods, cold drops and that sort of thing of the Cold War have suddenly become popular again. And I found that really interesting. You know, again, it's ostensibly a very modern action film, spy film, but the techniques and the tricks and are intimately familiar with anyone who watched those pictures from that era, you know.
We look forward to those two, and we look forward to whatever comes ahead, and we'll definitely be looking out for, you know, promoting those and reviewing those. And One Ranger, as I said, is a terrific film for the audience that has an opportunity to see that. It is really enjoyable. Thomas Jane's terrific in it. The entire cast is really supports the film in a really strong way, as well as the action, the story, the script. White Elephant, and then of course all of Jesse's films. I could go Savage Dog. You mentioned that is probably the film that got me hooked on your work, and then going back and seeing, you know, everything, you know, really, really, pretty everything that you've done, whether it be Charlie Valentine, whether it be
now you're going back in time. That's a
yeah,
good
yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. Your love of Steve McQueen, the Beautiful Ones, right? Is all of those are terrific.
We've got the rights back to the Beautiful Ones this month. That's the big epic one. For almost 2 years, we've been struggling to get the rights back because they were sold to a particular distributor who we felt did a terrible job. They colorized the movie. Put it out in a very sloppy manner, you know, very lackadaisical, uncaring way. So we've now got the rights back to that. So it'll be back. It'll hopefully be coming out soon again.
I can't wait. That is a terrific film.
It's so funny. You have a film that wins 42 film festivals. They flew me around the world for, you know, all of the film festivals. And the moment it gets picked up, they re-edited it and put it into color. And it just was incomprehensible to all of us. But
that is
sometimes, and
it's crazy. And you know, I watched that film, and then after that film, did a lot of reading about Steve McQueen, and did a lot of reading in Quentin Tarantino's book about Steve McQueen and the movies of Steve McQueen, and then went back and watched it again. And it is just—it's a great film. All your films are great. That's really one of my favorites.
Call me anytime. I'd love to come and talk about the pictures when they come out. So excited and happy that you like this one. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into it. Please, if people get the chance, watch it on Blu-ray or DVD. It's really enjoyable that way. And the BTS, you know, behind the scenes is worth seeing. It'll give you a different, as you're mentioning with reading about the Beautiful Ones, it'll give you different insight into the way the film was made. And I think it's worth doing. I think that's they're good companion pieces in this particular case.
That's terrific. And we'll put some links where folks can get their hands on some of these Blu-rays for One Ranger, as well as our review. Jesse Johnson, it's always good to see you. Be well, be healthy. Good luck in all you're doing. This episode is presented to you by Bet Online. And again, thank you for the time. I really do appreciate it. I know you're a busy guy, especially now more than ever.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.